You're listening to Limelight, part of the We Love Where You Live podcast series brought to you by the Michigan Municipal League. Here's your host, Emily Kalishevsky.
Welcome to Limelight, a podcast that illuminates the work being done at the local government level, the stories behind the people that do it, and the topics that matter to them. I'm your host, Emily Kalishevsky. A desire to serve their community, an innate sense of leadership, a dedication to ensuring diverse voices have a seat at the table. These are a sampling of the motivations leaders have shared when describing their desire to run for local office. For some local leaders, running for state office is the next logical step. But what's the difference? How can officials translate their local experience to a statewide race? What should those considering a run for higher office be thinking about and focusing on? Over the next two episodes of Limelight, we'll be diving in on these questions and more with two guests, both with local government backgrounds who have successfully earned a seat in the current state legislature. Representative Mark Huizenga is a Republican representing the 74th District, and Representative Padma Kupa is a Democrat representing the 41st District. First up, Representative Mark Huizenga shares his path from planning commissioner to city commissioner to mayor of the city of Walker and how that led him all the way to his current seat. All right, I am joined today by State Representative Mark Huizenga from the 74th District. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely, glad to be here.
So for those that are unfamiliar or don't know you or live in a different area of the state, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure. Well, I grew up in Walker, which is a small city just west of Grand Rapids, about 25,000 people. My dad was a teacher, but he also ran a farm in the summertime. So I really tell people I grew up on my hands and knees walking and crawling across the muck fields, picking radishes and green onions, driving tractors, and really learning about hard work. Mm-hmm. I worked at the city of Walker and had really three different jobs there. I was on the planning commission for about 6 years. I was on the city commission, and then I was the mayor. And as you said, I'm now serving in the State House of Representatives.
Excellent. So as you mentioned, you served the city of Walker for many years. How would you describe that to someone who's never been there?
Well, I think that local government is the best. I really, really enjoyed my time there. I probably like a lot of people, when they got involved in local politics, they got involved because there was maybe a particular issue or that someone asked them to get involved. I was on the ask you side of things. And a good friend of mine, he and I were having a meeting one day, and he said, you know, you'd be a really good person on the planning commission. Have you ever considered that? I had done a bunch of real estate development for my clients professionally over the years, and so I had been in front of planning commissions and things like that, but frankly, never considered planning commission until he asked. And I've always been the person that if somebody asks or if there is a need, if I can help, then I like to help. And it's just in my nature.
Sure. So you mentioned sort of your professional career before you entered local government. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? What were you doing that positioned you perfectly to sort of serve on the planning commission?
Yeah, so I have a pretty wide and varied career pathway, but through that, there's the threat of finance and accounting. Mm-hmm. I worked in transportation as a financial controller for a trucking company right out of college. And then I worked for a CPA firm doing installation and training of financial accounting software. My boss was an attorney as well as a CPA, so we did some advanced litigation support, preparing documents for court. So really did forensic accounting and did some deep dives to really learn about the data and how things worked. And then I worked for a physician's office. When I got to the medical practice side of things, I always tell people I didn't know anything. I didn't know the difference between Medicare and Medicaid, mm-hmm. and it was a steep learning curve, but I loved it. And got to be the office manager and very quickly learned the medical side of things, the finance and accounting, how it makes it work. And then I went to go work for Spectrum Health, and I was in the care management department there. And then I worked as a director of pediatric practices at DeVos Children's Hospital. Then I worked for a pain management company doing revenue cycle, and I was a reimbursement director there. And then 17 years ago, I went off my own as a healthcare consultant. So as a consultant, I work with hospitals, physicians, and pharmaceutical companies. So even though it sounds really wild and diverse, through that is the financial and accounting. And that background really uniquely positioned me in the city to analyze data. And not that we don't trust our managers, but it was trust but verify. And was really able to dig into the finances through a lot of things in the city.
Excellent. So that ask, when your friend asked you if you might be interested in serving on planning commission, was an easy ask, you would say.
Yeah, he just said, you know, you would be really good on the planning commission. He was on the planning commission himself and he was getting ready to leave. And he said, you know, if you're interested, I'll call the mayor and let him know that you're the candidate. Well, in those days, things were a little bit different. And, you know, like a lot of local government, things run a little bit loose and fast. And the mayor called me and the planning commission chair called me. We had just a brief interview and the mayor said, great, I'll appoint you and you'll be on the commission. And there we go.
Excellent. So that was a pretty quick process, it sounds like.
Yep.
So, you know, you made that jump, though, from planning commission to city commissioner. What motivated you to make that jump? Was that also an easy change for you?
Well, I was on the planning commission with the liaison to the commission, and he and I were both in the same ward, and I'd known him for a long time. And he said to me early on, he said, you know, Mark, someday when I'm ready to retire, you'd make a great city commissioner. And so we always had that in the back of my mind. It wasn't anything that I really aspired to. But again, if there was an opportunity, and I think that's what a lot of politics is today. If you're overly concerned about your goals for political, personal political goals and things like that, I think a lot of times they're not necessarily going to be delivered that way. But sometimes politics is really about being in the right place at the right time and finding the right window of opportunity. And that was exactly that. And when he chose to retire, then I got a call and they said, hey, Commissioner Versluis is going to be retiring. He announced it yesterday. Would you like to run for city commission? And, you know, I said, sure. He and I have talked about this for years. That's always kind of been the plan. And I'd be happy to do that. But as a consultant, I was getting ready to get on a plane to go to Arizona. And they said, well, the thing is, the signatures are due today. And I'm like, well, I guess I can't do it then because I'm getting on a plane in 10 minutes. And so the commissioner that called me, she called back a few minutes later and said, well, if I were to go around town and collect signatures for you, would you be willing to run? And I said, I would. And then she said, well, would you be willing to call your wife and have her go around and get some signatures today too? Because we need a lot of signatures. We need 50 signatures, I think it was. And I said, well, I'll call her, but she's probably not going to be real excited about doing this for me with a bunch of little kids at home. So we did it and then got the form and I'm on the plane looking at my email and the document had to be notarized and faxed back by 4 o'clock that day. Well, I was going to Arizona, 3 hours difference at the time. And when I got out there, there was just like 15 minutes before four. So I printed off the form at a Staples, grabbed a taxi cab, went to a bank, and very expediently went into the bank to get this document notarized so I could fax it back. And the notary said, we're busy right now. We'll be with you in a few minutes. And I had this look of panic on my face, I'm sure. And the bank manager walked in and he said, can I help you with something? Yeah, I must have looked horrible. And I said, yeah, well, I need to get this document notarized and faxed back as soon as possible. And he went to the notary and said, help this guy out right now. Stop what you're doing. And so this is really, really an epic story, I think, because as the document's being faxed through, I got a call on my cell phone from the clerk. And she said, are you sending those documents through, Mark? And I said, they're being faxed right now. And she said, thanks, and hung up. And I thought, well, that's kind of rude. Here I'm working so tirelessly to get this done. And she called me back later and said, I hope it wasn't being too rude there, but the newspaper was there. They wanted to know who the candidates were. And just as the newspaper was there, it was right at the deadline. And so by hook or by crook, at the last minute, I got in and ran. It's probably not the pathway most people will take. I probably wouldn't recommend it, and it wasn't really strategic, but it just frankly happened.
Under the wire. Yeah. I think I had a little bit of anxiety listening to this story. Wow, that is an epic path to getting those signatures in. So you mentioned your wife, you mentioned her helping you out getting those signatures. And I think one of the things that we hear from many people who are interested in getting involved in politics, whether it's the local or the state level, is, you know, some of those conversations having at home with family members about running for office. Was that something your wife was on board with right away, the decision to move to commissioner?
Well, she knew that I always had a passion for politics, that I enjoyed it. And some people would say politics is in my genes. My uncle was the mayor of the city of Wyoming for a number of years. And if you go way back to my family history in the Netherlands, when I was in college, I visited my mom's uncle and he was the burgermeister. So that's similar to the mayor position there. Mm. And yes, I would say it is the most important thing to make sure your family's involved, because when you're involved in politics, whether it's local or state, there are, let's face it, consequences that your family has to deal with. There have been countless birthday parties, church events or school events, things that we've had to miss because, look, you've got to be committed to it. And if you're going to be committed, then you know, your family suffers. And so every time I've run for an election, I've always asked my family first, and kids as well. Look, I'm going to run again, but I want to know if I have your support for it. If I don't, and if you think it's wrong, then I won't do it. And my family has always been very supportive. And in fact, when I first ran for the city commission seat, my kids were younger at the time, and it turned out to be a really positive thing because my one daughter in particular, she really, really enjoyed it. And so she'd go door to door, and having a cute little kid with us is always a good idea. It opens the doors up and it makes people a little bit more responsive and probably appropriate, I would say.
So a nice tip, have a cute kid with you if you can.
Yep.
And you mentioned that politics is in your genes, that this is run in your family. But it's interesting that you sort of were asked to do it each step of the way. You were asked to do planning commission. You were asked if you might be interested in city commissioner. So did you know from a young age that politics might be something in your future? Did you have an idea that this might be something you're interested in? Have you, you know, would you call yourself a political growing up? Or would you say that this was something that, you know, sort of fell into your lap and luckily you had people who asked you and saw some potential in you?
Well, when I was in 11th grade, then I was in the government class and we had a choice. And I'm just going to be very frank with you. You could write a paper or you could work on someone's campaign. Mm-hmm. And I thought it'd be a lot more fun to go work on a campaign. I had never done it before, so I didn't really know what I was signing up for. And I worked for Congressman Paul Henry. And I was assigned to go door to door, pass out these little candy bars and pass out flyers and promote the congressman. And, you know, I just thought of it as the easy way to get this benchmark, to get past the requirement of class. Turns out I absolutely loved it. I really loved the fact that I could help a congressman who I believed in, who was doing great work in Washington for us, be reelected. And it's daunting to run a campaign every 2 years, and it takes a village to do that. And, you know, guess what? After that, 2 years later, I'm in college. I volunteered on his campaign again because I really believed in him. So not only is your family important, but finding really people that are strong, that will be supportive behind you, that will stand up. And if it's a local election, I mean, it's not like you need, you know, like a congressional race where you need that many people, but having people that are be involved, that are willing to volunteer, whether it's being on a parade or going door to door or just getting the word out, it's really important. And it does take a village. And, you can't take anything for granted. And even for the race, I had obviously never run for anything before, but I didn't really know what to prepare for myself. I mean, you know, the whole thing took like a couple of hours and all of a sudden I'm running. And how can you prepare for that, you know? And I just thought, my goodness, what did I sign myself up for? How do I plan for this thing? I'm really fortunate now to have gone through the MPLP program and have learned a lot more. And I think that's one of the keys for me being successful in the state house. But in the time when you don't know what you don't know, it was daunting. I need to get signs. I need to get T-shirts, literature. We pulled it all together pretty quickly, and it turned out just fine. But nothing can prepare any candidate, especially a first candidate, when you're putting your signs out and you're going door to door to see all of a sudden your opponent's signs go up. It's like getting punched in the gut. And to be perfectly honest, I freaked out a little bit. I saw my opponent's first sign, and I didn't know what to think or do. And I thought the only thing I could do is I could walk around, drive around and be looking at things objectively. And so I said, I'm going to drive down three main streets, and I'm going to count his signs and I'm going to count my signs. And while I had them outnumbered by like 2-1. So I felt like I was talking myself off the cliff and that I was going to be okay. But it also energizes you and makes you work harder. And campaigning is a lot of work. At the end of the day, you represent people, and it's important for you to know those people and to get your word out. And I think a lot of times there's this fallacy that it's just a promotion, it's a billboard or whatever. At any race, any level, it's about going door to door and meeting people and knowing what their needs are, really knowing the issues so that you can talk intelligently. Most people will take your literature and say, thanks for stopping by. But there's a certain segment that will want to know a lot more. So you have to be prepared for all those issues, whether it's the state or the house.
Sure. So sort of circling back to your time serving the city of Walker, and thinking back to that very first campaign, you said it takes a village, but maybe not quite as big of a village as it might take for your state race. But when you did get into office in the city of Walker, what were your priorities? What were those things that you really wanted to get done in that role?
Well, being a finance and accounting guy, I just wanted transparency and accountability. I personally always have run on availability too. And I want to know the numbers. I want to be able to say to constituents or residents that we know the numbers. We know that we're doing the right thing with your hardworking taxpayer dollars. And I've carried that throughout my political career. I serve on the General Government Committee, and a lot of what we do is on the finance side. So this is the same thing as it was in the city of Walker. But, you know, we really did a lot of things to improve the way things were in the city. Long-term liabilities, pensions, and OPEB, this is an issue that almost every community faces. And when times are good, and if you've got revenues and you can find a way to do it, make sure you pay those things down. And I always told our commissioners, there's 10 places you could spend every dollar, and every one of them worthy. And probably the least sexy, the least fun, or the least thing that would be most valuable to get you reelected is to put dollars towards long-term liabilities and OPEB. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing that's going to be more effective for sustaining your community and helping you be more effective as elected official.
So I do want to get back to some of your campaign work, but since you brought it up, I'm glad that you did. You currently are on the Appropriations Committee, and you serve in the General Government Subcommittee. So given your role with the general government budget and the direct impact that has in revenue sharing, how has your experience as a local government official helped shape how you're approaching that budget?
Well, I think it's interesting, too, because it's not just about the revenue sharing and what does it go to. People think about it from a police and fire perspective. Mm-hmm. But, you know, our governor and the Republican House and Senate firmly believe that we need to do more for roads. And when you look at local roads, county roads, state roads, they all need more money. And so revenue sharing is a really important aspect that drives dollars to the locals that they can use to fix those local roads. And our residents and citizens shouldn't have to know the difference between the local roads, state roads, and county roads. Mm-hmm. And it's really an all of the above strategy that says we have to get dollars to our locals for those long-term liabilities, pension, OPEB, but for roads as well. And that's a great way to do that. I've been very supportive of continuing to increase our revenue sharing, but we have to do it in a sustainable model. And you can always do more. But it's exactly the same as being mayor of the city of Walker as it is being on the subcommittee for appropriations. I'm proud to chair that committee. And I've advocated tirelessly for a sustained increase there. But if we do too much of an increase or some large increase that one year, I think there would be nothing worse than to have to take it back the next year. So I've advocated for continued increases at a sustainable level. And I think that will be good for locals because they want to know that they can have a sustained level of revenue sharing as well.
Right. And you're informed on some of those decisions that you're making, on many of the decisions that you're making, because you actually have that local government background. Do you think that that positions you a little bit better maybe than your colleagues who haven't had as much experience serving in local government?
Absolutely. And as a local official, people say, so what's the difference between being in the city versus the state? And sometimes I kind of joke and say, well, it's exactly the same, but we add five or six more zeros on the end of everything here. and the same thing applies. There's 10 places we could spend every dollar at the state and all of them worthy. And we people say we don't pick winners and losers in Lansing. The truth of the matter is that we do every day when we work on our budgets, because there are some projects that are going to be some funded and some that won't. And it's our job to do the most good with the dollars that we have and to be the most efficient. As a local official, I felt like I did exactly what I was telling you earlier. We spend a lot of time learning how things work, drilling into the numbers, understanding what our pension looks like, and how we can really impact those communities. having that experience uniquely positions me to help be more effective, and not only for myself, but for my colleagues when they say, how does this impact locals? And it's difficult, but I think you almost have to say at every decision, what are the unintended consequences of what decision we're making here? Because if we don't increase it, if we do increase it, you know, what does it look like? And that goes for every line item in the budget. And there are always consequences, and how do we do the most good? That's really what we have to work on vigilantly.
Sure. And you mentioned what I think is interesting about local government, that you were taking a dive in and figuring out how things worked. And I think, you know, there's an interesting point to be made about organizations and associations like the League. So really, what do you think is the importance of organizations like the League to local officials? And what value do you think associations added to your job as a local official and now as a state official?
Well, as I told you, I had quite a whirlwind a trip to get to the local official level. And I obviously won the campaign for the city commission. And right after I was elected, the city manager gave me a tour and talked about things at City Hall. And then she presented me with an opportunity to go to an event that was sponsored by MML, an organization that I had never heard of. And it was the it was the elected officials orientation, basically. I can't remember exactly what they call it, but it's how you get, it's basically the ABCs of how you get to be a local official. And once you're there, what does it mean? And that proved to be one of the most valuable events that I participated in, because I immediately felt like I was empowered to make decisions and understood a lot of the details. In local government, state government, and any other industry, there are all kinds of acronyms. They provided me with tools and libraries to help me understand those kind of things. Also helped me introduce to different colleagues from around the community on the west side of Michigan. And it was really incredible. I've participated in a number of other educational opportunities that MML has conducted. And I always went to the annual conference and really, geek here, but I really found that the political updates were always the most valuable and the most fun, because I was always fascinated, like, what are those people in Lansing doing with my taxpayer dollars, and how is it going to impact me here at the local level? And now we're at the state. So it's great to be able to see this kind of come full circle, really.
So how would you say it has come full circle? We're glad that you're joining us to talk about sort of your journey as a local official and how that's changed as now a state official. How would you say your relationship with the League has changed, or how have you seen the League evolve as you've evolved in your career?
Well, I would say one thing is that I really believe in what the League does. Advocating for locals is so important. And I've also learned that every faction has an advocate, lobbying firm, or some other organization that will come in and talk to me about issues. And I think sometimes people think about lobbyists as being a bad thing, or advocacy groups. The truth of the matter is that we have a $50 billion budget, and we have all kinds of issues. We have 10 million people that we support, and there are all kinds of things that we need to learn about. And there's no way that we could learn about those things independently. The League provides insight for us as to what's happening locally. At your event in the Capitol earlier this year, I went to that and had a chance to talk to my local officials, and it was a wonderful way to connect with those folks. And just by convening those people together and having us have an opportunity to connect is really valuable. I try to get in the district and talk to people as much as I can, but it's just not possible to connect with that many people. So you really provide a unique position for us. And so for the listeners out there, make sure you go to those events and talk to your state officials. We want to be approached. We want to hear what your issues are. And yeah, we know that there's a lot of times complaints. That's what we're here for. We're here to take the good and the bad. And frankly, it's mostly an advocacy issue. And how do you advocate? And you have to stand up for your own good and educate us on what your issues are. And we're here to listen and do the best we can to help you.
Absolutely. So circling back to some of the things we discussed earlier, so you served as commissioner, then you served as mayor, and then you decided and made the jump into running for state office. So what motivated you to switch from local to state office? And was that an easy decision for you?
Well, I really, frankly, love the job as mayor. Mm-hmm. Term limits was enacted in Walker just a couple years ago. And so I was in the first part of my second term, which would have been my final term. And like I said earlier, sometimes with politics, there's a window of opportunity. And Rob Verheelen, who was former mayor of Walker, he was going to be termed out in the House. And that opportunity was there for me. And as much as I love the economic development things that we did in the city, the financial things we did, the leadership and conducting strategic planning retreats and all that kind of stuff, the opportunity to go to the state was a good one for me. And I saw that window of opportunity and took it and said, I want to make that thrust. And feel very fortunate to have had a very good Mayor Pro Tem, Mayor Gary Carey now. He and I have been very close. And, you know, as opposed to when I became mayor, I really worked hard to make sure that transition went really well. I gave him electronic copies of documents, and he and I have been working, have worked closely to make that transition as good as possible. So as long as you feel like you can leave things in as good a place or better and allow that transition to occur, then it's okay. It's hard to let go of things. No one, I think it's, no one wants to admit it, but no one really likes change. It's frankly exciting. You know, I was telling someone just yesterday that, you know, when you start in the House and you're, the freshman class. And that's really what it feels like. You're a freshman in high school or a freshman in college. Like, you don't know where the bathrooms are. You don't know where, like, where's the Capitol? Where do I park my car? What do I do? You know? And it doesn't take long and you figure it out. And then pretty soon you're thrust into committees, and committees are the same as the city, except for way more dollars, way more people, new people. And, it's just different, but it's good. And as long as you, believe that what you're doing is for the good of the whole, and that you're doing the best for all the people, for all the 10 million people in this great state of Michigan, I think that's what you have to hang your hat on and say that you're doing it. And we obviously have term limits at the state, and you know, it sounds like a long time, 6 years to serve as a state rep potentially. You have to run every 2 years. You're always running, and it's the same thing in local government. You're always running. You know, you can't sit back and relax and say, I've got this. You know, if you're at the Meijer gas station getting fuel, people will come up to you and say, hey, I have an issue, whether you're the mayor or the state representative. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing, because it means people know who you are and they're willing to approach you and talk about those things. And, you know, they talk about, well, right now, we're not in session. So what's happening right now? Well, guess what? We're working in the district. We're talking to people. I was in Sparta last night, went to their summer fest and had chicken dinners. And you know what? I went around and talked to people that I didn't know, and just to get to know them. And I handed out a lot of business cards, said, hey, if you have an issue, call me, you know, we're here to help. And that's really what it's all about, making sure that the people really know who you are, that you're there to represent them. It's in the title, representative, and it's our job to represent 90 some thousand people. It's hard work, but it's very gratifying, and I'm just proud and honored to serve people in Michigan.
Sure. You referenced earlier MPLP, which is the Michigan Political Leadership Program. I actually was a graduate of that program with Walker's current mayor, Gary Carey, and it sounds like you also participated in that program. At what point did you decide to apply in your political career, and how did that help you as you were sort of preparing for your state race, or if you were using it to sort of prepare for some local races?
Yeah, you know, I remember the first time I learned about MPLP. They have two fundraisers, one in Detroit and one in Grand Rapids. And a friend called me and asked if I wanted to go to the breakfast in Grand Rapids, and I'd never heard of it before. And it's bipartisan, and you just don't know what it's all about until you really see it. And I saw the graduates on stage, and they raised their hand and talked about the program. And I thought, oh my goodness, if I could ever be part of such an honorable group of people. I mean, it's a small group. It's a select number of people. It's an intense one weekend a month event. But I tell people, when I went to MPLP, it was as if I was getting another graduate degree, because it's an intense opportunity. And I think Michigan, with what they have with the MPLP, is really fortunate, because not only am I a member of the MPLP alumni, it's like a fraternity. So if, you know, Emily, you're MPLP. So together, you know, like you have like extra credence with me, you know, it's like, oh, it's like, you know, the badge of honor that we can share together. And, it is truly one of the greatest honors of my life, I think, to have been part of that program. And I have, I know lifelong friends that I was very close with.
I totally agree. That's exactly what it's like once you've graduated from that program, I can say, you know, you automatically have some credibility and an in with anybody else who's graduated from the program. And I appreciate that so much in my career and what I do at the league. So when you did the MPLP program, did you do it while you were still in local office?
I did. You know, you can't do it when you're running a campaign.
And right.
Just like the window of opportunities with elections, when I first contemplating applying, and I had many people encourage me to do it, which I thought was great too. But when I applied, I thought, you know what, if I don't get in this time, this might be the only window of opportunity for me, because the next year I had to run again. I was in my third year as mayor, so I really had a great basis for how things work, and I felt like I was probably ahead of the curve for a lot of people because many had never run for elected office. You know, we've got three freshmen that are on the elected side this year in the House, and none of them were in my class. But having been elected, having been part of MPLP, really changed the way that I thought about things. And yeah, you know about how things work with elections and campaigns and what it takes, but it really gave me a solid basis for what it would take to run for a statewide office. And they just did a really terrific job empowering us, talking about the media productions and how to talk to people, how to prepare for those things. And then, of course, it even helped me immensely as the mayor when you have, you know, whether it's trying to work through difficult issues, how to talk to media, how to be planning for things. And it's just really an amazing program.
I agree. I'm glad we both got the opportunity to do that.
Yeah.
And I'm actually also very grateful to have done that, because it brought me into a room with so many wonderful leaders in our state, including Mayor Gary Carey. I got to give him a shout out also from Walker. You talked about how great he is. I can talk about how great he is as well. So what I really want to know, though, is, and I think, you know, our members would love to know, if there are other local officials throughout the state who are perhaps just thinking about maybe making a run for state office, what advice would you give them? What should they be thinking about?
Well, I think really most of all, think about the window of opportunities. Sometimes it's not necessarily your timing. And finding the good time. And if you're going to run for any elected office, plan on making a plan and working that plan. I was talking to a couple candidates last week, and you know, this whole house turns around pretty quickly. A 2-year election cycle, it might sound like it's a long time, but it happens very quickly. And I think especially when you look at no reason absentee voting, that time frame for you to get in to run for even those primary offices, it happens quickly. So you've got to be boots on the ground, assemble a team, pull together your kitchen cabinet, and really identify the advocates. And MPLP probably was the greatest at helping me be empowered as to how to do that really well, whether it's just how to campaign, how to go door to door, what kind of things to say, how to pull together literature, how to make plans for campaigning. And if you want to do this, you know, you can't do it all yourself. Make sure you get somebody that can be really that manager, that point person for you. I've had hired campaign managers before. Last year, my daughter, frankly, ran my campaign for me. She did a great job. She was she's in college, and it was a way for her and I to spend great time together, just coordinating all those details, whether it's parades or walk list, and find other people that can advocate for you and with you. I think as an elected official, local official, you already have a lot of resources. You just have to leverage those and find the resources that you can have, whether they're friends or family. Get out there, be in the parades. I know, you know, when I was running for mayor as a city commissioner, I was in the parade as a city commissioner on a float. And then I had to be like Superman and run all the way back the parade. I changed my shirt and I walked in the parade again. When I ran for state house, I did the same thing. And so I was the mayor and I walked the Walker Parade for Memorial Day, got to the end and ran back to the beginning again and changed my shirt. And then I'm the candidate for the state house. That's really a great example of what it's like. You're running all the time. And you can't take your foot off the gas. You have to be there. You have to hit doors. And it's the most important thing. It's not about the lobbyist. It's not about who's bringing you money. It's about the people you vote for. And I think that's one thing you can never forget, is that the people that put you in office are the ones that you report to. I love talking to children. And when you go to a classroom to read or whatever, I always tell them, you're my boss. Your parents voted for me. I represent you here in Lansing. It's my advocacy for you, the people in my district that I work for. And at the end of the day, that's the most important thing for people to remember, is that it's the people that you represent that are the most important.
I love that perspective. And a few last things, I guess, that I would love to touch on. You mentioned earlier, as you were running for office, placing your yard signs and seeing your opponent's yard signs and that being difficult for you. So I want to touch on mental toughness, because I think that is a huge thing that maybe doesn't always get talked about when we're talking about running for office, that it is a challenge and it can be something that really holds some people back. So how do you stay mentally tough? Obviously you have to say physically tough, walking door to door, that takes a lot of effort, but that mental strain, how do you combat that? What do you do to sort of keep yourself in check in that way?
Well, I think if you start off and have your family behind you and supportive, that means a lot, because they're your support structure and they'll stand behind you. And maybe they don't love to walk doors with you, but they'll probably do it. even last year, I was driving up to a town and we're going to do some doors, and my daughter was with me, and I pointed out some farmers, some people working, picking broccoli or something like that. And I said to my daughter, I said, "Boy, I'm glad I'm not doing that today. It reminded me of the days when I was on the farm." And she said, "Sheesh, I'd probably rather do that than do doors." So they may not always do it fully loving the whole situation, but you have to have your support network and have your family behind you. That means a lot. There are mental cues. I bought a brand new pair of shoes every time I ran election. I said, "I'm going to wear these out, and I'm going to wear these every time I walk and in parades and going door to door, and plan on wearing shoes out." And that's really how it works. And make sure that you know that that it's a long race, but you can't take your foot off the gas. You know, it's just like, when's the best time to plant a tree? Yesterday. If that window of opportunity to do doors yesterday goes by, you can't get it back. Pace yourself. Don't kill yourself over it, but make sure that you do doors every week. And every community is a little bit different. Some days are better than others, but I've always frankly found that going about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon till like 7 or 8 is the best time for me. Yeah, you interrupt some people for dinner. They don't necessarily like that, but they're home. I think it's a lot more effective than leaving a flyer there for an empty house. Saturdays are good because a lot of times somebody's out there mowing the lawn, and they're oftentimes not afraid to just sit down and turn the lawnmower off and talk to you about issues that are either local or statewide. Be prepared. Know what's going on in the state, because I remember the first time I ran for the city commission, I had a gentleman that said to me, "What do you think about building that bridge to Canada?" And I said, "Well, sir, as a local official in Walker, we really don't have any say in that bridge." And he said, "No, I know, but I want to know what you think about it and why." And I had an opinion, and we talked about it. And he said, "Well, it sounds like you really know what you're talking about. If you know what you're talking about, you got my vote." And the other thing is, when you move towards partisan politics, it's different too. And I've always said I'm going to hit all the doors, knock all the doors, not just Republican doors. We're gonna meet those people, because again, we represent all the people. And be afraid for the tough questions, because when you go to partisan level, it changes a lot. People will ask, "Are you Republican or Democrat?" And you say, "I'm a conservative. I'm a Republican." Some people will slam the doors on you. For the most part, people are respectful. We're all human beings. We're all trying to do the right thing. And I respect the other side completely. A lot of that probably has to do with my upbringing, but MPLP was a big part of that too. And I've always tried to say, how can I help you understand what we're trying to do here? And it's always kind of one of those secret things I like to do, is just think about, how can I convert a Democrat to me? And if you can think about those, because that's a hard thing, right? And I had somebody say to me last year, "I voted for you. I have never voted for a Republican in my entire life, and I voted for you. And you know what? I'm happy I did. I think you're doing a good job." That's as satisfying a story as you can get.
High compliment. Yeah. That's excellent. So moving forward and looking forward, what are your priorities in state office? What are you looking towards in the future?
Well, one of the things that we have in our district is PFAS. It's not only just in Rockford and Algoma Township. It's across the state. And finding real solutions for that. The state's really doing a good job in identifying it. But now, how do we ensure that people have safe and good drinking water? That's right up at the top. How do we continue to be fiscally responsible? How do we use our dollars wisely? I serve on four subcommittees for appropriations, including the general government, higher ed, DHHS, and K-12. All those get a lot of activity. So, and there's something that applies to almost everyone in all those committees. So how we use our taxpayer dollars wisely is really important. And how we just do the best. I was recently honored to be appointed to chair a task force on information technology in the state and how it's deployed. And one of the comments I tell people all the time is as the state of Michigan, we are not an IT shop. We're not designed to be software generators. We're here to deliver services to our citizens. And how do we do that in the best way? Software is probably the most efficient. And how do we make sure that that's a good interface for the end users, that's efficient, that's done with taxpayer dollars, that drives efficiency? My background, I also own a software company. So it was a natural fit for me. So it's really been a pleasure to be a part of that program. It's hard. Government moves slowly and IT changes quickly. You think about how quickly you change your iPhone or whatever your device is. Building legacy systems that have been here for a long time, they have longevity. But the reality is that we have to have systems that are going to be nimble and keep people happy and stay up with the times. They're costly. But how do we keep that balance between delivering those services with good systems and backboards to keep things working well?
Representative, thank you so much. One last piece of advice you give any local official who is perhaps considering a run for state office.
If you're gonna do it, go all in. You know, there's very little room for a half candidate. It's very obvious when somebody is kind of half in and says, I think I'm gonna try this. If you're gonna run, go wholeheartedly. And if you're gonna do it for the right reason. Don't do it for the fame and the glory, because it's really not there. It's hard work. It's all hard work. And if you have a passion for doing the right thing and want to help, whether it's local or state government, do it. But plan on working hard and working the plan.
Again, thank you so much, Representative. We so appreciate your perspective and your insight into running for office, both at the local and the state level.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
This has been a production of the Michigan Municipal League. For more information on our programs and services, please visit www.mml.org and join us for the next episode of We Love Where You Live.